Welcome to Holden Village. In the fireside room, today's speaker is Kathy Sorrells. And Kathy will be speaking on the power of myth and ritual in our lives, facing our fears and resistance. So, let's listen in as Kathy begins speaking.
Up until very recently, I've been here at the village as the carpenter, as a carpenter, one of them, cabinet maker. And last week I got to teach for Elder Hostel, and I'm teaching now this week, and still doing some carpentry and still getting nabbed in the kitchen or in the dining hall by people who want to get things done before I go, but we'll see what happens. And in another life, in another myth, in another story, I do work in multicultural education and diversity. In Seattle is where I live, but I work all over the Northwest and sometimes around the country in different places. Doing work with schools a lot. Some of it's on curriculum development, trying to help schools become more multicultural in terms of their curriculum. Some of it is working with students and faculty on intercultural communication skills, so they have folks from a lot of different cultures in their environment, and we're trying to help them work better together. And some of it's in business and some in nonprofit. So that's the general range of my work. And I have a real strong interest in myth and ritual, and have studied and enjoyed learning more about those in the different countries where I've lived, as well as in some of the cultures here in the United States. And tonight, actually what we're going to do, this week's focus is on myth and ritual. And just real quickly, I'll tell you how I understand those two words. Myth, really, I understand as story. It's a story that's meaningful to us. And it may be from a movie, a book. It may be a story that's been repeated in a fashion from the Bible. But there are stories that touch us. And when I think about myths, they're stories about gods. And when you look up the word God, or gods in the dictionary, it means to draw out. So it's stories about things that draw us out, things that resonate with us, that touch us. And really, myths do a lot of different things, but one of the things they do is teach us. One of the things I found really helpful about mythology is that it really gives me signposts in my life. It kind of is a map of the territory, and it helps me understand where I'm going. It also can help us understand our relationships to each other. It's sort of a sociological function that way. Also helps us understand where we are in the world. And I think, lastly, myth can introduce us to and connect us with the mystical aspects of the world. So put us into a spiritual plane. And ritual I see as an enactment of myth. It's the physical embodiment of myth. And we'll kind of explore those a little bit tonight, but we're going to come at myth and ritual really somewhat from the back door. We're going to focus more on culture and diversity tonight, and we're going to do a simulation. And we'll talk about that in just a minute. But I'm so happy that you all came so that we can do this. Let's just go around real quickly, and I don't want anybody to think about this too much, because we're going to go around quickly and then we've got to move into the simulation. But if you'll just say your name and just tell us one thing that you're passionate about. They're passionate about. And we're not going to write it down and hold you to it. You know, it's okay. Just whatever comes to your mind. Do you want to start?
Sure. I'm Courtney, and I am a really strong feminist.
I'm Mark, and I'm passionate about music and art. I'm John, I'm passionate about people who are invisible.
I'm Nikki, and I'm passionate about the abolition of the death penalty.
My name is Julie, and I'm passionate about a transforming process and working process.
I'm Mattel, and I'm passionate about dance.
I'm Phil, and I'm passionate about music and liturgy.
I'm James, and mine's a little different. I'm passionate about firefighting.
That's great.
Hi, Margaret.
I don't know.
It's okay.
I'm Jan, and I'm passionate about being outside.
I'm Keith. I'm passionate about gardening.
I'm John, and I'm passionate about cooking.
Cooking?
I'm Peter, I'm passionate about music.
I'm Ann, I'm passionate about the high country.
I'm Robin, I'm passionate about staying in touch with my friends.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm Linda. I'm passionate about good health. Good. Well, I mentioned my name before, but I'm Kathy, and I am very passionate and have been for many, many years about cultures and different cultures around the world. And so what we're going to do tonight somewhat springs from that. It's a simulation game that I worked out with a friend of mine. It's actually now out there in the market, and it's called Ecotonos. Ecotonos, eco referring to ecology, and different eco also referring to environments, different environments. And tonos is a Greek word for tension. So the whole idea is that when you have different environments overlapping, it creates tension. And when you have different cultures overlapping, it creates tension. And what we're trying to do tonight is to think about how when we overlap cultures, that can be a positive thing, a creative thing, a catalyst for change in a positive way, and not one that creates tension that becomes negative and degenerative. And we're modifying it tonight. So this is Ecotonos modified. If you ever do Ecotonos again, it won't be the same, because Ecotonos actually takes about 2.5 hours, but we don't have time for that. So I've compressed it a bit. So we're not going to do the full thing. But how many people have done a simulation game before? Okay, about half of you. What we're going to do is simulate reality. And that means we're going to set things up. I'm going to give you some roles and some sense of how to act and interact together. But within that, there's a lot of freedom for you all to participate and to make things up. And the idea is, like I said, to simulate what happens in the real world. In this case, we're trying to simulate what happens when people from different cultures get together. And cultures have ways of behaving, ways of interacting, communication styles. They have languages, and they have traditions that make them distinct. This is absolutely incredible. I had no idea all of you people would come. So thank you for being here. We're just talking briefly about simulations. And sometimes, just so that to note, you know, you can get kind of engaged in it as if it is real. And we want you to do that. Some emotions come up, interactions. When we get done with the simulation, we'll de-roll and move out of this. We don't want to carry this around with us for the rest of the time at Holden. I actually did a simulation in when I first quartered my graduate program, and it was about power and power dynamics. And at the last day of the quarter, we were still playing out some of the simulated roles, which isn't good. So we don't want to do that tonight, so we'll de-roll. But so simulation, just to know, you do get involved and engaged in it. Tonight, the purpose for the simulation that we're doing, one of them is just to have an opportunity for you all to experiment and play around with myth and ritual in an interesting way. Another objective of it is to give you a sense of what it's like when cultures do come together. And from that, then we're going to identify some strategies of how to work effectively when cultures come together, when people from different cultures come together. And have fun. Next hour. So it may feel as if I'm kind of moving you along when we're doing this, but we kind of have to keep with the time just so that we're done in an hour. And believe it or not, I'm going to ask you all to number off 1 to 3. Mm-hmm. So if you'll just start and go 1, 2, 3, and 1, 2, 3.
1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3.
Perfect. Now the ones will go clean my room, which is wrong. How many people blitzed today? When we started out, we all numbered off, and then we're told where to go in different parts of the world to clean up. So, the ones will be culture number one, and the twos will be culture number two, and threes will be culture number three. Just to explain it to you a little bit. What I'm going to do is give you all some clues. There's three clues for each culture to give you a sense of something about those cultures. So what you want to do is get in your group, you'll sit down, you'll read over them, and you'll discuss them. And it's not very complicated. Often when we do this game, we have six or seven clues, but I've made it a little bit shorter and briefer and easier to understand. So you'll get into your culture, and you'll begin immediately after you've understood what the clues are, you're to start acting in that way. So this is an acculturation process. When you come into any culture, you have to learn the rules of the culture. Well, these are the rules, and you'll begin to act in that way, as the clues tell you. And you've got three tasks while you're acculturating, and this is while you're separate. The first one is as a group to pick a name for your culture. And you can do it very quickly. It can be very silly, it can be very serious, it can be whatever you like. The second thing that you want to do is, given these cultural rules here, to think about a myth that would explain why your culture is this way. So all cultures have myths that give us a sense of why they are the way they are. So as a group, you're going to create a myth that explains why your culture is like it is. And the third thing is to create a nonverbal greeting. So all cultures have ways of interacting with each other when they greet. It might be shaking their hand, it might be some sort of thing like this. But you're, as a culture, want to create some kind of a nonverbal greeting. Make sense? Mm-hmm. The main purpose of all this is to really acculturate. So while you're doing these things, you need to act in your culture's way. So begin to act in the way of your culture. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Do you have questions?
What are the three things again? Name?
I'll tell you. I'll come back around. You need to figure out a name for your culture. You need to create a myth for your culture. And then a nonverbal greeting. Okay?
Some people.
Imposing who he was on us, but you know, ask the question.
But I kind of resented having to explain it. It's different.
Well, took time.
So, Mark, what was the name of your culture?
Cronids.
Okay. What I'd like to do is hear from those people who were not Cronids. What was your experience of the Cronids?
I felt rejected by them.
Okay. Anything else?
So I couldn't get to know them at all. Couldn't reach out and touch them at all. It was so little.
I felt kind of rejected, but asked it. I want to keep on going.
I think that's almost attractive, right?
They were a little bit hostile sometimes, yeah. Like trying to establish some sort of pattern of what we were like. They were a little bit, they came on a little too strong.
You acted like we're all of us are really kook.
So you wanted to get away from us.
It makes you kind of just give up and go back to your own group.
I was a little afraid of them.
They were frustrated.
Yeah. Okay, anything else?
I felt sorry for them. And that they just seemed so frightened and timid that they couldn't connect. Incapable of.
Okay.
Oh, Peter. What?
And so that was, anybody have anything else to say about the Cronids?
Energetic bunch.
Yeah.
Conditional. You have to produce to be okay, or you know if you're not okay, so it's like...
And
everybody's
not with us,
Yeah. Okay, the culture number two. Was that?
That was us.
That was you, okay. And then the culture that was here initially?
Number three.
What was your name?
The Rememberers.
Okay, what? Now, the Rememberers, I'm going to ask you all to be quiet, but have the others speak to your experience of the Rememberers.
Were you the ones that greeted each other by sort of missing?
Yeah.
I found them available.
Pardon me?
Insistent.
They were willing to sit down and take their time and talk for a while, to know you, let you get to know them a little bit. You can really connect with them.
It was really nice that their, the way that they touched people was similar to the way our group did, because it was pretty easy to have a conversation, because there wasn't this big physical barrier of some people wanting to touch and some people not.
Yeah, I was a rememberer that came into our group and, like I said, and was willing to spend some time with us.
We got gossiped about a lot when we left.
It's hard to understand, though. I don't understand it.
Okay, then the final group was called...
Sort of the people of the darkness.
Her name.
The dark.
Yeah. Protecting ourselves.
People that came from the darkness.
People came from the darkness.
That's a long story.
Yeah. We love them.
That's probably how you get to know them.
So, yes. be quiet, but to ask others, what was your experience? Describe your experience.
Frustrated. I was frustrated. Mm-hmm. I always wanted to find out what they were about, and they just were so, no, we don't really know. It's sort of this, it's sort of that.
And you don't really want to know.
Right.
Well, wouldn't it be great if they were? Yeah, they were secretive, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't find them.
Secretive?
I was very warm, lovely conversation.
I felt that bit.
Good listener, very good listener.
I thought they had secrets.
Well, they told me about being in the cave.
Yeah.
About being, you know, beware of being eaten, and if you didn't touch.
And the beast.
The beast.
I was a little afraid of that beast.
Well, I was very pleased with the way they decided to, how to overcome the beast by being together.
Oh, so did you find that out about
them? They told
me. Any other descriptions of that culture that you wanted to put up?
I found them entrapping.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I
would
use the word crowding. I mean, I just
thought
it was crowded.
Leech-like.
Yeah.
The other one
was
chasing us,
wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
In group.
Yeah.
Gays.
That's
growing.
Got it, I think.
Okay.
Okay, anything else you want to just dying burning to say that we need to get out of here
She's
about?
She's only got a little chocolate. So.
Only got a little chocolate. And very little board left. What I was doing while you were saying this, and some of them, it's hard to decide which one to category to put them under, but what I said to you and kept trying to say to you was to either explain, to tell me what your experience was, or to describe your experience. To describe your experience or tell me what your experience was. Most of what I heard here were interpretations. Mm. This D standing for description. There were some descriptive things, few descriptive things. They take their time. Good listener, that's kind of questionable whether that's descriptive, but you're talking about their listening skills. Couldn't get to know, afraid. These are somewhat questionable, too, as descriptive. Most everything you said, they're energetic, they're too strong, they're frustrating, they're frightening, they're timid, they're available, they're uncoordinated, they're insistent, they're easy to interact with, hard to understand, frustrating, they're warm, they're secretive, they're entrapping, leech-like, smothering, we'll have to question those. But those are interpretations, and what are they interpreting from?
From your own
cultural experience, from what you expect people to be. So they were mostly interpretations. Some of these are a little questionable. They could be called evaluations. Calling somebody leech-like sort of has a connotation of evaluation. The difference between interpretation and evaluation is interpreting is from my perspective. Evaluating is saying is whether it's good or bad, whether you thought it was a good thing or a bad thing. Generally, interpretations do have some connotation there of evaluation, of being negative, but I put them primarily in this category. Our tendency is to do that as human beings when we interact with people who are different from ourselves in one way or the other, is to interpret and evaluate them from our own cultural frame of reference. Much of what we're trying to do in intercultural communication is to move ourselves out of our frame of reference and be able to see the other person's point of view and to see and experience the world through their perspective. Before we close, I want to do a couple things. One of them is I'd love to hear the stories, the myths, and of your cultures, if you can tell us briefly. If somebody from the Cronids wants to...
Well, I think ours was, we had a god who essentially punished us whenever we got too close to other people, whenever we didn't keep to ourselves.
Yeah.
There was a plague, there were famines, there was disease whenever we touched other people.
Mm. We worshipped him with setting up those stones that told us exactly when planting time was.
And there were
lot of requirements. He's a very rigid God, and when we get too close to others, we got disease.
And there was also a sense of, we were initially, every 5 minutes, we were supposed to gather together and do our greeting to one another. So it was a time of recollecting them, but also kind of gathering of ourselves to kind of regroup.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Did any of you feel, I thought that was very interesting, very innovative. I haven't seen that before. Did you feel that as you moved into the other groups that you felt a loss of a sense of your own culture? Not the Cronids, anybody.
We never moved.
Yeah, the Cronids pretty much avoided that possibility or that even happening.
Yes, I found that.
Well, when we realized Meta was not with us, we went and got her, or him. What's going on up here?
Mm-hmm. So, John, how did it feel when you were sort of a sense of...
Well, for one thing, I could immediately, there was some similarity between our two cultures.
Mm-hmm.
We like to touch, and they like to touch.
Mm-hmm.
So that was, you know, right away, there was mm-hmm. something that we had in common.
Mm-hmm.
When we met with the, and there was even something in common with the Cronins.
Mm-hmm.
The Cronins liked our greeting, the one Cronin that I greeted. She quite liked the fact that we weren't touching that part,
mm-hmm.
but she didn't like me to be touched for a long time. So I found that there were some common things between all of our cultures.
So the people who came from the dark. I know it's a long story.
Well, basically, our ancestors lived during the Ice Age and retreated into caves to be able to survive. And we were living in the dark, so we had to keep in constant contact with one another.
Did at the end by telling them that anyone who would hold our hands, we knew was not the beast, that they were all right.
Yeah, so that's why this other culture, they wanted nothing to do with us. It was suspect.
Mm-hmm. Scary.
Very scary.
I found just in being in this little culture for 5 minutes or something, I wanted to kind of stick with them. And by shaking somebody's hand, and they didn't want to do it, then I kind of wanted to go back to my group and just shake hands with the people that I was supposed to do for the norm or something.
Mm-hmm. Sort of this need to be reinforced by your own culture as you go out to another.
Yeah.
And that, does that, if anybody had experiences like that, again, the simulation is about simulating what happens in the real world, experiences like that in your own life?
It's true here at Colden.
Yeah, can you say a little bit about that?
No, I mean the reinforcement of, you know, the religious aspects. And we're coming here from all over the world in the United States.
Mm.
And it's nice to meet people from home, but it's great to meet people from the outside, too.
Mm-hmm.
So there's some of that here.
Mm-hmm.
I always feel really, I don't know the word stupid, but when I'm in a group and I can't speak the language, I just really... inadequate.
I felt that way in South Africa when we went with the church touring much of the black, and then was feeling quite relieved when we went to the white suburbs of Johannesburg. The need to socially gather in my race and be reinforced by that.
Mm-hmm.
And the sense of being a minority was the first time I ever experienced that.
Mm-hmm.
And the need to be part of my racial group. I never quite put it that way until you mentioned it that way, but I remember that.
Mm-hmm. So often when we're in a culture and we're the only one or we're in the minority, there's a real possibility of losing a sense of who we are, losing a sense of identity, because we aren't being reinforced, losing a sense of self-esteem. I don't know if you have watched or observed, people who are in a minority situation tend to have a sense of lower self-esteem, or if you've been in a minority, as you're mentioning here. Can we think of who, you know, at Holden might feel that at some point? Racially, generally, I wouldn't say that's going to be a big issue, but there are other ways in which people can be minority.
Well, the people who don't stay very long, the people who are only here for a short time, I've heard discussion about that, but, you know, you're kind of, if you're not staying a long time, people who are more long-term may not invest as much in you, and so you're a minority in that respect.
Mm-hmm. And plus, you haven't had a chance to acculturate.
Right.
You don't understand all the rules. You don't know how to act. People aren't wandering around and telling you, nobody wrote the rules down on a piece of paper when you came in to hold it.
Or one person tells you one thing and another person tells you a totally different.
Which is very true about cultures. They're very complex and ambiguous.
Yeah, a little incident at the dining hall the other night, you know, was it last night? We were new last night. And there was, or one of the meals, and there was this stuff for kids that would be served at 5:20. Well, it was almost as though when we went there at 5:20, it was all gone. Because, you know, so like we came back and says, Father, it must be some unwritten rule that you don't pay any attention to that, and what you want, you go up and get, and you don't watch the time. But it was sort of, I mean, not a very minimal thing, but being a new person, and I know every time I've come to Holden, and I've been here 6 times, the first meal at the dining hall is so confusing. You know, it's so like everybody moves in, and they know what they're doing, and they're eating, and what do we do here, you know? And then all of a sudden there's announcements, and then they're moving.
It's like if somebody has this giant shot back at one end of it, you know, it just draws everybody in and then blows them out. Yeah. It was the first day I was here. It's like, what is going on here?
Yeah. Yeah. That makes, you know, that, but the good thing is that the community is so welcoming. Mm-hmm. At the evening vespers, that is a very good thing.
Other ways that people might feel in a minority at Holden?
If you were Muslim, you might feel.
Yeah.
Or if you were Jewish.
Or Jewish.
Or atheist.
Yeah.
Right.
Or didn't shred your orange and banana peels.
Yeah.
Or if you didn't love to work.
Yes.
I think even if you were a, for want of a better term, a traditional Christian, one who came with, you know, a set of images that are pretty much straight from the tradition, coming here, there's a lot of folks I know that get stepped on as a result, because the images here are much more non-traditional.
Or what if you're a person that wanted to wear a business suit all the time, or just wanted to wear a dress and nylon?
Yeah.
I mean, you just wanted to. I mean, what if you were? There are a lot of yuppies here.
No, they might be. They might be transformed.
They might be transformed. I know. I thought that today.
There's quality control, you know? That's what I was.
So I thought, drive down the Fields Point and count the BMWs.
Well, I know the first time I went to church services for Eucharist, and I wore a skirt and nylons. Mm. Not high-heeled shoes, but nice clothes.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody else did. I felt very foolish that I don't do that anymore. Well, that's
what happens. Our culture is very quickly.
But that was only my own feeling.
Yeah. Right. But it was not just your own feeling. It was the norm of the culture
that
you picked up on.
And
that's how culture
got. I didn't know that yet because on Sunday you always look.
And that's how we minimize diversity in culture, too, is by having such a strong norm. If there's only one way of doing things, then most everybody will tend to conform to that. But if we want to really be as inclusive as possible, then we try to create an environment where more than one way, many ways are possible and can be shared and can be enjoyed and can be accepted. Mm-hmm. I want to hear from the last culture, and then I want us to just strategize real quickly about ways in which we can, both for Holden but and your life out, how we can be as inclusive as possible, and in it, intercultural interactions, how can we make them work? How can they be more effective? This was very entertaining and amusing, particularly as an observer watching you. I would say it would be challenging to call this a very effective, positive intercultural interaction, which it wasn't supposed to be necessarily. But the last culture, what was their name?
Rememberers.
Pardon? Oh, the Rememberers. Yes.
I forgot.
I guess I'm not part of the culture. Do you want to say anything about
the culture? I felt really very comfortable. It was very comfortable to be connected. You know, there was a sense of security. And we walked around with arms linked. Just a sense of security in the past and our ancestors.
What was your story?
Well,
it had something to do with one of our ancestors. We track our ancestors that go back 10,000 years. And one of our ancestors, they're all kind of milling around, and one of our ancestors wanted to go out and do something. And he left the group, and he was swept up in the tornado. And we were all frightened, but then the tornado came back down to us and circled around us, and it brought us together. And gave us a lot of power.
And the tornado was from our ancestors.
And our lives are very long, they're not short, but our lives are long because we go back so far.
We're always in touch with our ancestors. And those are the most important people with whom you communicate. So time is all related to our communication with our ancestors. They take precedence over doing something, making appointments with people.
And anything worth saying is said in a story, and the story is a communication from the ancestors.
A long story.
Great.
And we don't confront directly. Indirectly. We're indirect.
Sounds like the Plains Indians, and that maybe that tornado was in Kansas.
Some of the recent people I've seen in a movie, that's a tornado carrying out a woman.
Oh, a house? That was really disturbing for our ancestors.
Reminded us of our ancestors.
That's very creative, as all of them this work. I'd like just to think for a few minutes here before we leave about things that we can do, ways that we can be in our interactions with others that would increase the inclusiveness, that would help us to be more effective and gracious and accepting and acknowledging of people who do come from different backgrounds, maybe not as extremely different as the ones that were simulated here today. But in some ways, the values and the ways of thinking and the behaviors of many cultures are as different as these. Some of them are values that we never can see, but they're there and they're held. So thinking of things that we can do, ways we can be.
To listen without evaluating.
Right.
Is there any place in the world that people don't smile?
What I've read in various cross-cultural things is that they're crying and smiling are fairly universal cross-culturally. And of course, crying can be evoked for many different reasons. You can't interpret that necessarily.
What's also cross-cultural is baby talk, when mothers and fathers talk to their children. Mm-hmm. Oh, they're now. But that actually is cross-cultural, that baby talk.
Yeah. The one thing though, I do know is when I lived in Turkey is that these Turkish friends told me that who had lived in the United States that they thought it was very, very odd. These were young students at a university. But that whenever Americans cross paths, you know, just walking down the street, they smile at each other. Mm-hmm. I just thought that was the weirdest thing. You know, you watch people, we do. So how you use the smile is different in cultures, but you're very right about it.
speak.
Happiness, yeah.